Welcome, everyone. This is Fit as a Fiddle Plus. I'm Kathy Benner. I am your host, and Rita Brewer is my co-host, my co-mod. Once we get started here, I'm going to kind of sneak over in the back of the house and make her the co-mod so that if I get bumped off for any reason, Rita will be still on the call. Hopefully, we both don't get bumped off at the same time. It is storming here in central Ohio. And so, Rita, tell us where are you located, Rita?
I am in Wake Forest, North Carolina, near Raleigh, and we are in the 80s today and sunny.
I get it. Okay.
Not complaining.
Well, we are a little stormy here, so I hope I don't get bumped off. And so I see Debbie just jumped on. So welcome, Debbie. Glad that you're here as well. And so anyway, I want to introduce to you today our guest, our special guest, and I've heard her on Clubhouse, couldn't wait to have her on this particular podcast. We have Dr. Elizabeth Hughes. She is a Stanford-trained dermatologist, inventor, author, and coach, and an outside-the-box approach to health and well-being. By blending her scientific training with holistic self-healing principles and her intuitive abilities, Dr. Hughes helps clients discover the root cause of their dis-ease, activate their inborn healthy ability, and reverse symptoms of chronic illness. Wow. Dr. Hughes, Elizabeth, welcome. We're so glad you're here.
Well, it's a delight to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. Tell us about your background. I just kind of want to go back in time a little bit, and let's hear a little bit about your background and how you even ended up where you are today.
Yeah, sure. So I am a completely conventionally trained doctor, and really anything other than textbook medicine didn't register for me until about 7 years ago now, when I had a patient who had a chronic condition, who was told that she would not recover, was heading for surgery. And the surgeon said, well, I don't even, you know, I give you a 50% chance that the surgery is even going to work. And in a short period of time of talking with me, changed her belief. And 3 weeks later, this incurable condition was gone, 100% gone. And I'm lucky that I'm a dermatologist. The skin heals so quickly and you can see what happens. But so I was able to see without any test. I could just look, you know, her leg had no hole in it anymore. It was a big leg ulcer, and she was told it was never going to get better. And so under normal circumstances, I probably wouldn't have thought about it, but it was something so remarkable that in 3 weeks, where I prescribed no medication, I just helped her change a belief and sort of outside, you know, not in any formalized way. You know, she had a belief she was old and it was just never going to get better. And so I said, well, that's not true. And it just struck me, like, how is it? What activated her body to heal her leg that nothing else had done? I mean, she'd been getting treatment for months and months and months, and her leg had only gotten worse in that time. So it led me to really ask, how does the body repair itself with or without medication? Like, what is actually going on inside? And for me, why aren't we doing this for all our patients? Like, if you can heal something that is incurable, avoid a surgery, why aren't all doctors doing this? It's not a good service to our patients. It's not a good edit, to be honest with you. It's really not. So that led me to start to investigate things like the placebo effect. You know, how does the placebo effect work? Which led me to ask, you know, like, how do emotions and preconceived notions affect how our body functions? And how do these things then affect how our DNA is expressed? And it all sort of was this cascade of me asking, well, what next? And how? And why? And it led me into an area of there's rich and robust research, but it's just drowned out by all of the pharmaceuticals and all of the commercial interests that really do affect our research and what's available to people. So that's the background of my journey. And I now use these techniques of self-healing for myself. Like that's what I do. I don't, you know, where I used to reach for medicine and pills for aches and pains, I just don't use these things at all anymore. So, yeah.
That's so interesting, wow. Doc. And as a PA, and I can't help but ask, was it a venous stasis ulcer or an arterial ulcer?
So actually, it was a traumatic ulcer. This was an 82-year-old woman who had walked into the edge of her dishwasher. Mm-hmm. And that was so you as a PA will know, she had no underlying medical conditions. She didn't have heart disease. She didn't have diabetes. She was a healthy 82-year-old, the type of person we all want to be. She was playing golf twice a week, living independently, doing everything, not taking anything other than a baby aspirin every day. And basically what happened was doctor after doctor, after nurse, after wound, you know, she saw wound care nurses, everyone said, you're old, this is never going to heal.
Wow.
And so, and because she was seeing wound care for months and going twice a week, we had like exact measurements of how this thing had grown from a scratch to something about that big and deep. Like I was looking at tendon when I saw it, and that's why she needed a skin graft. And but she had this deep belief, I'm just old, it's never going to get better. And once I swore in front of her, I never swear in front of patients, but she said, everybody says I'm old and it's not going to get better. And I said, well, that's bullshit. And that was enough for her to go, wait, everybody's told me this. And 3 weeks later, no treatment whatsoever, other than put a little Aquaphor in a bandage, you know, and a loose gauze bandage over it. It was completely gone.
I love that. Just shows how powerful the mind is. It really is, because our body truly does what the mind tells it. So I'm curious, what kind of techniques do you use with your clients now? So is it clients? Are you still working as a dermatologist as well, or you do private coaching?
This is entirely exclusively done as private coaching. And that's what I do the vast majority of my time now. They're clients. So I use a variety of different techniques. So that what I found was there isn't one thing. And so many people are so technique focused. I just want hypnosis. Well, hypnosis is great, but it's not everything. So my first step with anything is to explore what are people's limiting beliefs. Do you believe everybody in your family has this, so you're never going to, you know, get past it? Do you believe that you're just old or something like that? It's in my genes, you know. So we go and we look really carefully at those beliefs. And then I have several different ways of actually changing the belief on the subconscious level. I tend to use a technique called Psyche a lot, but the technique doesn't matter as much as making sure that you pinpoint exactly what's going on. That's really what it is. And then the other thing that's really important is putting your body in a state of optimal repair. Like I call it being ripe for recovery. You need to be in this state of optimal repair, because you can have all sorts of good beliefs like my body heals itself, I can overcome anything. But if you're spending the rest of your time in fight or flight because of you hate your boss, or you're living somewhere you don't like that's too noisy and you're never getting sleep, or things like that, that will undo all of that good thought work. So I work with people to sort of structure the rest of their lives so that the other 10 pillars of their life, which includes creativity, purpose, your environment, your relationships, we work on all of those so they're supportive as well.
That's fantastic.
This is such an amazing, yes, it's such an amazing conversation. And I tell you, the stories that we tell ourselves are so powerful. Right. And if we can just change that narrative, and right. that is so hard because it is so ingrained in us and we are so much a product of our environment, and it's so hard to change that self-talk.
And it's, it can be hard to recognize it because it sounds like wisdom. It sounds like something that you've heard your entire life. You don't question it. Everybody right. in my family has diabetes, so I can't, you know, I'm going to get diabetes too. And it looks like it's true, but it's really not. It's really mm-hmm. not.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is, and we can talk about this, but there are really very, very few genetically determined diseases. We like to think that the key is in our genes, but it's really not. For every bad gene you have dozens, if not hundreds, of good genes that can counteract that.
So how long did it take before you transitioned away from dermatology full-time to doing the coaching? Was it just that one patient that was like, this is it for me? Or I'm sure there were so many of them, right, that just kept coming. Because once you open your eyes to it, right, you see it everywhere, right?
Right, exactly. And I started to look back in my career at mm-hmm. other people where they'd had either worsening of something, and then I would go, oh, did I do that? Did I reinforce that? and then people who had spontaneous clearing of things that you couldn't explain, but it hadn't been at the right time when my eyes had been open enough to see it. So to be honest with you, after that patient, it took me about 3 years to feel like I was ready to help coach people. Solely coach. And then another 3 years before I transitioned entirely away from practicing dermatology, conventional medicine. And by that time, I was so dissatisfied with the conventional medical system that I felt like I was doing harm to people by continuing to work under that paradigm, so to speak. People, the rapid pace and don't talk to people and just give a cream. I mean, I'm a dermatologist, so just give the steroid cream when I know there's so many things wrong with them. That became a point where it was like a moral problem. I just couldn't do that. I know it's right for some people, but it wasn't right for me.
Elizabeth, I do have a question for you. If you look back when you first decided that, again, that it was a moral issue and that, you know, that just wasn't right for you, was there a particular aha moment? Was there something an event or a client or a time? What was the aha that made you realize that?
Oh, you know, there wasn't really a single aha, but what it was at the end of the day, I would reflect and say, did I really do my best today? And when the answer was time after time, no, I did well. I did I didn't do badly, but did I really bring the best of me and what I know? No. And so that added up over the course of a few years.
Would you like to share, Dr. Hughes, because I know, we all go through our own healing challenges and transformations and process, and even as clinicians, of course, we're human. So we see these things in our patients and how we can help them. And then we open up our own can of worms, our own lives, and see where do I need healing and, you know, what do I need to work on? So what was that process like for you personally?
Oh, well, I'll give one specific example. There were lots of examples there, but I used to have chronic left hip pain. Like it hurt all the time, morning, night. I couldn't lie. I couldn't sit in certain ways. And I would buy the big Costco ibuprofens. And I would go through one of those enormous, like 1,000 pills every few months. And I sat down one day and started to ask myself, why am I bothering me so much? I'm not old, you know, and I found that I would do everything. I would stretch too much. I would stretch too little. I would do too much yoga. I would back off on the yoga, whatever it was. It was just, it hurt all the time. And I asked, like, why is my hip hurting so much? And I had gone through a really painful divorce. And the answer came, you haven't really forgiven your ex. And I had to, so I had to go and I had to meditate on forgiving my ex. And it took me a little while in the sense of I had to sit down and meditate for like an hour. And then the pain went away. And I haven't taken an ibuprofen since. Like I just don't have that pain at all. It went away. I was starting to wonder if I needed to have a hip replacement. No, I just needed to forgive.
That's phenomenal. I had the same, a similar experience because I was in my 20s and I was just having such chronic pain in my back. It was like a spasm. It was like a rope in my back muscles. And I, you know, was a PA. I graduated. I was working as a PA. I did everything conventional medicine, you know, would have told me to do, and I got no results. And then I started to explore, you know, complementary and integrative therapies, and I found energy medicine. Mm-hmm. And I had I saw a demonstration. It was powerful. I had a healing myself. And within two sessions, that pain that I had suffered with day after day for, I don't even remember how long ago, because this was my 20s now, but it was a long time. I know it was really debilitating. And it was a betrayal issue. Yeah. So it was an emotional issue that was causing the physical pain. And right. Once that was brought to my consciousness and I was able to acknowledge it and then, you know, process it, pain went away.
Yeah.
That's when I realized how so far off the mark we are as far as conventional medicine, as far as really taking good care of people in mind, body, and spirit, because we only take care of the physical body and that's it. Right. And there's so many more pieces to the puzzle, right? For true right. healing.
Right. So. Yeah. And I can share another interesting story, particularly poignant story for me right now. So I have greyhounds, and one of them is lying on the floor right next to me, but that's the only one I have right now. But I had two greyhounds, and one of them got an osteosarcoma, a bone cancer, and he mm-hmm. broke his leg. Now the average lifespan after an osteosarcoma for a dog is about 6 months with therapy. So I, you know, in this case, the dog's leg was broken. He was in pain. So I took him to the emergency vet, obviously, and they recommended an amputation. And I said, great, we will amputate his leg. And then they said, well, and you really should see an oncologist and just talk about your options. I said, no. We are not going to do anything. We are just going to, you know, love him and have him have a great life. He lived another 3 years and 9 months after that. And he lived to a normal lifespan for a greyhound. He lived to the upper end of his lifespan. So on three legs, no pain, no medicine. He had, you know, this is one of these situations where the conventional surgery was the right thing to do. Take, you know, the leg had to be amputated. We did all of that. But he didn't need the chemotherapy. And I don't regret that one bit, because he had a very, very happy life. Mm-hmm. And he probably would have died sooner and miserable if I'd gone the conventional route.
Awesome. So do you have like an ideal client that you like to work with, any like a specific niche?
So I actually more enjoy people with a specific, not necessarily a physical condition, but a mindset, people who are open to this idea. And oftentimes need someone who will listen to them when they say, I think this all, you know, I think the reason that I'm having all this stomach problem is related to my grandfather or something like that, because a regular doctor won't listen to that. A regular doctor won't sort of ask them, so talk to me about your relationships and things like that. So someone who's got their mind open to the fullness of how the body operates and how it heals itself. And then in a way, the physical condition doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Illness can manifest in a whole bunch of different ways. Your back pain, which was betrayal, my hip pain that was betrayal. Some people would say, oh, those are two totally separate things. You know, one's a bone, you know, a joint problem, another's a muscle problem. No, no, it's all the thoughts and the emotional content problem. So those are the people I love to work with. And I've worked with people who've had, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome, unable to walk or work or do much of anything for a decade. And, you know, it takes some time, but in 10 months, they're better. They're, you know, walking, talking, eating whatever they want and, you know, traveling, all of those things. So
yeah.
That's what I enjoy doing.
It's so much more rewarding, isn't it, than just have that 15-minute visit and here's your cream or gel and be on their way.
Right. Well, and speaking as, you know, having been in the regular medical community for so long, there's something of a repeat customer. Like I never had to worry about would somebody be coming back to me, because really nothing ever worked fully. I love seeing people saying, I'm all better. I don't need to see you anymore. And I'm like, yes,
yes,
yes, I agree. You know, go and be well.
Right.
Elizabeth, that was actually going to be my next question is how has your life changed since you changed your practice?
Oh, I'm so much happier. And I'm there are some goods to being a physician. Like there's some great, and it's a great honor and a great privilege to be a doctor. But at the same time, there was so much frustration for me even before I started to open my eyes to alternative things. But there's so much administration, you know, the insurance company says you can't do this, you have this restriction, that restriction, people other than you making decisions about how you're going to practice. You know, those things were so frustrating. And I don't have any of that anymore. And then in a big sense, like things happen, like this beautiful house that I'm here. This is not a Zoom background. This is my actual house. Like this couldn't have happened. This was sort of like a gift from the universe in the hot real estate market last year. I was the only bidder on this house and it is my dream house. And I was like, okay.
That's awesome. It's like a beautiful.
Where are you?
That's a great story.
So I live just outside of Seattle. I used to live in the city of Seattle and I wanted to move someplace with more trees. And so I did.
See them through your windows. They're beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
That is a great story also about the real estate. I get that. You know, as, once you're in alignment, it seems like the universe just starts handing you things. And I certainly understand that.
Yeah. And I had been looking for a new house and I had gotten outbid on, you know, by 26 other people on like some other houses. But then this one, it's like, you're supposed to live here and nobody else wants it.
And it's your dream house. I love that story. Yeah. What would be the single most important piece of advice that you would give someone that wants to change their health or in probably in your terms, change their thinking? What's right. The most important piece of advice that you could give them?
So I would remind people and have you say over and over again, my body is constantly healing itself. That is happening all the time. I mean, what have I been talking now for 25 minutes or so or less? Every one of us has replaced trillions of cells in that time. There are blood cells that are dying. There are intestinal lining cells that are dying. The lining of the lungs are dying, all of them. And we're always making it new. And our bodies are doing a great job of it. So remind yourself of just that biological fact of how incredible the body is and how it knows what to do. Because you've got your living proof. And it, you know, we basically could survive about 2 weeks if our body wasn't constantly healing ourselves. In 2 weeks, we'd have no platelets, no lining of our intestines, no skin, no lining of our lungs. and we'd be dead.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just had something on my head I was going to say, and I just lost it. Anyway.
It'll come.
Yeah.
What are you currently working on, Elizabeth? Is there something that you're heading toward? Are you working on any type of a project that you are willing to share with the group?
Well, I am. One of my missions is also to get some of this information out to physicians. I think that the future of medicine relies on having doctors whose eyes are open. And so I am working on a book right now, very specifically about how medical training damages the doctors. Like there's good things, you know, we have to go through it, but there's a lot of not good. And there's a lot of things that could be done much better that would create, I think, better health for everyone. I think everyone suffers because doctors are trained in this very, very brutal manner. So that's what I'm working on right now.
That's awesome. I would love to read that. And, you know, I'm hearing that all the time because, you know, being transitioning out of the PA world, I still work, you know, per diem or part-time, but I have my health coaching practice as well. And I feel like I'm constantly meeting, you know, conventionally trained clinicians like us who are transitioning into the coaching space because the conventional medicine environment is just so toxic. I mean, people are leaving in droves and the suicide rates for clinicians are higher than they've ever been before. And it's just sustainable for us to have these long-term careers anymore.
Right. And it is that sustainability that I want to mm-hmm. see because, you know, people are going to get sick. People are going to break limbs. People are going to have accidents, and we need to have qualified, enthusiastic professionals to take care of us. But right now we don't. And so that has to change.
And this was happening before COVID, and now it's, you know, 10 times worse, right?
So yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. But the training and the schooling is just so antiquated, and it just takes so long for the medical community and the teaching, you know, in the universities to catch up and, you know, roll with these changes, you know?
Right. So that's, I believe that if we got probably about 10% of doctors, there are about 1 million practicing physicians in the United States. And I think if we, not 10%, 1%, like that 1% can make a difference. So if we had 1% of the people sort of trained to think differently, I think everything would change. It would be like, you know, a few little grass seeds makes a whole lawn.
Yeah, I wonder if we're even there already, because I mean, just like American College of Lifestyle Medicine, Preventative Medicine, Functional Medicine, Integrative Medicine, I mean, there's so many of us now, and we're seeing the damage, like you said, of some of the things that we have done, like in dermatology, for example, when for many conditions, the only option that you have is chronic antibiotics. I mean, like how many years we treat acne with antibiotics and Accutane and these medicines that for long term are so damaging to the gut microbiome, and then how it affects our immune system after that. And when you realize like that's what you were taught and that's the only choice you have, you think that is the only choice, because you went to medical school and I paid all this money. I put in all this hard work and I must have learned all the right things because I went to medical school. I'm a doctor, right? I'm a PA. And then we find out, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. we really missed some marks here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then I think back about my history where I at age 40 decided to get into the cosmetology industry because I wanted to buy real estate, and it was, you know, kind of a cash flow type business, and it was a great way to build the real estate. But I realized, and it just kind of sneaks up on you, that 25 years later, I realized I'd been sitting in this petri dish of chemicals for 25 years. You know, with hair dye and acetone and acrylic nails and, you know, and the fumes and, you know, and after a while, you know, I'm thinking, wow, I wonder how much damage I really did in that 25-year period. Yeah. And it starts to get discerning. You know, you're like, I need to do something different. And so I made the decision to retire. And it was a tough one because, you know, sometimes making a transition where you know you need to go is tough because of the finances. And so for those in the group that are trying to launch either their own business or move into an area where they know they need to go, how hard was it for you, Elizabeth, to make that transition?
Oh, boy. It was difficult. It was. And I think it's partially the financial, but it's also the identity. If you've identified yourself as I'm Dr. Hughes, like I can always lead with that. And they, you know, people know who I am, or you've got something else, you know, I own this, or I have this degree and qualification to step out and create something new on your own. Oh, that feels scary. And I think that I spend a lot of time worrying about the finances when really it was that loss of identity for me that was as big, if not bigger, but I wouldn't want to admit it.
And that's the case for a lot of physicians, don't you agree? I mean, I worked in surgery for many years too, and I know that's the case for a lot of them because that's how they identify themselves. And the thought of retiring, you know, when they're 60s and, you know, they're still really, you know, shape, well, kind of, not really, but most of the doctors I work with are just as unhealthy as the regular population, but they're not ready to just sit around and retire and do nothing, but they can't really reinvent themselves because being a doctor or a surgeon is like the all they can really connect with.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. And that was a big decision for me as well. So I certainly can relate to that. And so just listening to your story and how you made that transition, I just kind of pondered how tough that was for you to make that change. And then of course, when you're on the other side, looking back, what I always end up telling myself is I should have done that sooner. Why did I wait so long?
Yes. Yep.
Because you realize that it is okay on the other side. And you're like, why did I wait so long to do this? You know, because it's so much better. Anyway, I love the conversation. I love where you're going with this. Now, you're writing this book. Do you have a launch date or a publication date yet? Or
no, I don't. I don't. It is still not even a complete draft yet, but before the end of the year, without a doubt. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're definitely going to watch for that. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Now, how can folks get in touch with you if they want to connect with you? And then also, I want to open it up to questions. And I think Carmela, do you have a Carmela? Go ahead and unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your question, please.
Hello, Elizabeth and everyone. Hi. My question is, do you feel that right now, I guess, in your field as a, you know, being a physician, that there's more physicians that's kind of stepping out of that world due to the pandemic and the mental stresses? Because I just went to my doctor, we always argued, and I'm like, you know, I don't like you, but I you because I have to. Like, well, I love you. And I go, well, I love you, but I just like saying I don't like you. But she told me she's in her office now in her practice once a week because she started teaching. And she said, you know, my parents were educators and she has a passion, and that's just teaching, you know. And me, I don't like going to doctors, but who does really? And I myself have started, well, it's been about 6 years now, using like the essential oils and things because one, I don't like to take meds or anything. And if you would have asked me when I was in my 20s, they would tell me to take this antibiotic for 10 days. Yeah, I would take it for three. I'm feeling fine. I don't need it. And then I would get worse. That's just been me. But I was wondering if there's a lot more just kind of because
yes,
people, absolutely. The COVID and everything and being cooped up and the mask and all the extra stuff. I mean, has it really affected them that, you know, it's like, okay, do I really want to do this? Is this my passion anymore? You know,
it definitely gave people a pause to sort of ask those very questions. Is this really my passion? Is this all that I can do? And what's interesting from a doctor standpoint, there was a group of doctors, people who work primarily in hospitals who were heavily affected by COVID. But what happened on the other end, most other doctors do not spend their time in hospitals. So a bunch of other people at the very beginning, when nobody was leaving their house and nobody was going away, doctors' offices were going under. Pediatricians no longer had their kids coming in for routine stuff. And so their offices were empty. And suddenly they were, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, they were so under, you know, they had time to say, wait, is this really like, I could go under just because of the COVID? And it really did happen. I mean, it was an enormous thing. You know, so that's another thing. A lot of doctors were like, well, what if something like this happens again? Like being, I've got this job that's actually not sustainable for me, because all of a sudden, if patients don't come, I'm, you know, hemorrhaging money to keep my office open. Same thing happened with dentists and orthodontists who were hit really, really hard, you know, for months and months and months on end. And it really did make people think something's lopsided, because if health is supposedly, well, you have to decide if health is a public good, shouldn't we support everybody getting care in some way? And that includes the people who are providing the care.
You know, that's a piece of it, Elizabeth, that I hadn't even thought of, but you are correct, because anything that was an elective, everyone decided to pause, you know, to put off, because there was no reason to put themselves at risk, especially early on when we didn't know how this pandemic was going to look. We didn't know how contagious it was going to be. No one knew. And right. So everything kind of came to a halt.
Right. And, for most of 2020. Absolutely. I mean, and the doctors, we didn't get back to normal volume. I stopped practicing at the very end of 2020, because I was like, I have this other passion, these other things that I really want to do. I can do it remotely. I don't have to see people in person. That's where I want to thrive. And that's how people, that's the medicine people need right now. And my time in the doctor's office just felt less and less aligned.
Mm-hmm. That way. I agree with you. Had to pay insurance, right? Like the malpractice insurance, you probably had to keep. I mean, so when you look at it, it's like you're not making the money, but they're still wanting their money too. So,
yep, exactly.
Absolutely. You still have all the overhead of the office, your malpractice insurance, the staffing that they had to pay for. I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
Now, I do have a question, and this is walking that tightrope, if you will, that fine line. Someone has some symptoms. They're not sure what's wrong. And so now they're like, okay, how do I determine when is it time to go the traditional route, and when is it time to work with someone such as yourself or with Rita? And thinking I need to change my thinking, or I need to change my environment. And how do you know the difference? And does that not still, and this is a loaded question, does that not still represent a malpractice situation possibly for you if you're coaching someone and they come back later and say, I don't believe what you told me was right? How do you handle that?
So I don't see that the two things have to be completely separate. Okay. So the same idea that with my dog, you know, like I knew we had cancer. I knew we had to amputate the limb because the leg was full of cancer. I wasn't going to say, don't, you know, I wasn't going to say, oh, he doesn't have cancer. I wasn't going to say, oh, he doesn't need the amputation, just, you know, or anything like that. There was a medical piece, but then there was the supportive help the body heal. So the vast majority of people who come to me have already had a diagnosis made. And I do encourage people who don't know what's going on to go make sure that they've had a diagnosis made. But when the treatment isn't giving you the results you want, when somebody says, you're just old, it's always going to be this way, or gives you one of those answers that's counterproductive to your healing, then it's time to bring someone like me or Rita in that, that will help to support them in other ways so that every part of their healing treatment is optimized. I never tell people not to see a doctor for real symptoms because I want to know, but it doesn't have to be an either or.
Great. Perfect. I have one more question. What happens if you have a family member that's going through a medical situation and you want to be a better support for them? How can you come alongside a family member and be a better support and work with someone like you?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question because relationships are is incredibly important. So what I would say is it's important for the family member to get their perception of illness aligned. So for instance, if you, you're the sister, your sister has cancer. If you're walking in with a lot of beliefs like, oh, cancer equals death, you know, everybody who gets cancer dies, and you're carrying that, that energy and that worry to your sister, even if you're supporting her, that's that actually, because we communicate on this nonverbal way, it mm-hmm. may be rubbing off, so to speak. So there is, it is, I love your fine line, but there is a fine line between helping and being worried for. So if there's worry that you have about cancer or diabetes or whatever else it is, that's where you might want to work with someone like me, because I can change the beliefs around, you know, cancer, you know, the majority of people actually survive cancer, things like that, so that you can bring a positive attitude to it, to your family member.
Perfect. 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 And I know I've been a caregiver. I know we have some on the call today that are caregivers currently. I certainly get that. I'm looking to see who all we have with us. Of course, I am Kathy. I am the host. Rita is my co-host, Rita Brewer. Dr. Elizabeth Hughes is our guest today. We have Carmela with us. We also have Debbie. We have Kyle and we have Nancy. Is there any questions from anyone else in the audience? Please feel free to unmic and ask your question.
I do have another question. As Kathy says, we have caregivers, and right now I am remotely, seems like I try back and forth. My mother has like the early signs of dementia. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through it with my mother-in-law. I was a caregiver, and my father-in-law. They both passed away. Because my in-laws went through it, I have like this, I guess, way of thinking that my husband's going to get it. So if he forgets like the smallest thing, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, you're probably still showing signs of this. And, you know, even like with my mom, I think the doctor, because her one neurologist, majority of the time she will ask me, well, what do you think we should do? Because she was like, ask me what medication. I'm thinking, okay, if I have to decide this, then you need to be paying me the money that you're paying for me. But I guess my way of thinking, sometimes I'm thinking that it's not as bad as it is, because there's days when, you know, she has those good days and she's normal. Have you had to help people in that aspect? Because this is more of like, maybe, I guess I'll call it like cancer of the brain cells, as opposed to something in the body where, you know, their memory is being affected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, from my standpoint, the way I work, it is a little bit difficult to work with a person who is having memory loss. Not impossible, but it can be difficult if they don't have the sort of full attention span. But for you, some of these beliefs, you've seen what happened with your in-laws. And then to assume that that's what's going to happen to your mother or your husband. Every person has a unique path that they go through. And when we assume, because, you know, these people had, you know, a rapid downfall and were miserable, you don't want to take those assumptions to someone else. And so that's another place where becoming okay with that other person's illness, in it, not in a way that it doesn't bring worry to them, that can be useful. But you know, my mother actually has dementia, and I have done some work with her, supportive work through coaching. She's now at a point where it's not possible to do that with her anymore. But at one time, you know, a few years ago, actually, it was very useful. It was very beneficial. Some simple things, not really deep work because she didn't have the attention span, but there are things that you can do. And this would be a fantastic situation for energy medicine, actually, something like Reiki or something like that, that a person can have done for them and they don't have to have active conscious participation the way you would in some other things like tapping or the Psyche that I use or EMDR. So
absolutely. That was great. And I would love to add to that for you, Carmela, as well, because my mom passed away in January from dementia. And learning long before she got the dementia, I learned through my practice, because diabetes prevention and reversal is my niche. That's my specialty as a health coach. And what people don't realize, and another reason I need to be outside the box, is that there's so much research now that shows the link with excess processed sugar in the diet, so much so that they're calling dementia type 3 diabetes. That's the name that they've given to it, because there is a direct correlation. I would also highly recommend, there's a book by a doctor who specializes in dementia, who wrote a book called Alzheimer's Reversal, or Reversing Alzheimer's, something like that. His name is Dale Bredesen, B-R-D-E-S-E-N. So I highly recommend reading that book. And I tried to get my mom on board with changing her lifestyle, changing her diet. She lived on a processed white sugar diet. She was completely sedentary. She was depressed. I tried to get her to move in with me and take care of her, but she refused. She just wanted to do things her way. She didn't want to make any lifestyle changes. And that was really, really hard to watch, her continued decline over 5 years. Like every single time I saw her, it was a slow and steady death, is really what it was. And it causes depression as well, the dementia. So there are things that you can do. Lifestyle interventions and nutritional changes can have a significant impact and improvement in that. And I'm actually teaching a blood sugar masterclass tomorrow night, which is free. So if anybody wants to come to that, let me know. And I can drop your email in the chat box and I can send you a link to register for that tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We're going to dive a little deeper into all of that.
Yeah. So.
Rita, I wanted to give you, I wanted to give you an opportunity, Rita, to actually announce that to the group. We have 8 folks on the call now. Kyle said he would love to join, and he put his email there. And we just had a couple of newcomers in the call. Bear with me here. Yes, Terry Lawson just joined us. So welcome, Terry. Any other questions for Dr. Hughes? I want to give everyone a chance to ask their questions.
I would be curious to learn more about energy medicine and where to even get started there. I've always been very interested in the ancient Egyptians, and I know that this was something that they were known to be associated with.
Kyle, before Dr. Hughes answers your question, give us just a little brief background about you and some of your credentials, just so we get to know you a little better.
Well, I'm presently employed in real estate, been doing that about 10 years. Before that, I did project management for IT development and software for about 10 years. And before that, I was actually very interested in going into medicine and med technology. I've got a pre-med degree in molecular genetics.
Wow, that's great. So I might not be the right person to talk about energy medicine as a whole. I do some more active energy medicine processes, but I'm thinking, I'm betting that you're thinking of things like healing touch, which is a modality developed by a nurse, or Reiki, or what's another, Barbara Brennan's Hands of Light, some of these, or some of the shamanic healings, you know, processes like soul retrieval and things like that, where the patient or client is a little more passive. I have experienced all of these, but I'm not really an expert in this. But the basics are, boy, now I'm blanking on this wonderful book I just read by a physician. I think her name was Shamina Jain, J-A-I-N. But there is this idea of biofields, energetic patterns that we align ourselves to, and that different types of energy medicine can help to remove energetic, I'll call it interference in these patterns. And I think that there is a lot of, there's some really good evidence and data to support the use of energy medicine. I really do, but I will also say that you can go and have someone, let's say, do some Reiki on you for your, like your pre-diabetes or something like that, but you still have to change what you eat. it's another piece of the puzzle, and no one thing alone is a magic bullet, but the all of it together, because we're complex beings, and so we can't have one thing be the only way to treat things.
Oh yeah, so, no, I absolutely agree with that. And that's exactly my experience from all my different fields. There's never one answer that solves one problem for everybody.
right. But there is the Energy Medicine Professional Association is a group that I actually belong to. So Energy Medicine Professional Association is a group of people who do, they are mostly psychologists who practice a whole bunch of different energy medicine techniques. And that might be a good place to go. You can you could find some practitioners in your area if you wanted to.
Thank you.
Kyle, feel free to reach out to me afterwards too, because I'm actually an energy medicine practitioner as well. I did a 3-year training program with the Barbara Brennan model and sonic healers as well. So we don't have time to go into that tonight, but I'm happy to talk to you about it more afterwards. And I just wanted to piggyback too about what you said, Doc, about like there's multiple different pieces. Like Carmela, I love essential oils. I think they're wonderful, but they're not going to fix everything. You know, we have to implement all of the healthy lifestyle, because you could put all the oils on your body as you want, but if you're still in a toxic environment and toxic relationships and eating toxic food, they're not going to do it by themselves. Yeah, exactly.
And I see where it is so important that, you know, as we become, I'll use the term enlightened, as we become more and more enlightened, it is so important for us to walk our talk and live the lifestyle. And I want to circle back, and I know we're coming up to the top of the hour, but can you, Dr. Hughes, mention just a little bit about epigenetics?
Yeah. So epigenetics is the science of how DNA is expressed, how our genes are expressed. Most people think that our genes are like sort of like a recipe book, where there's one recipe, let's say, for lasagna and one recipe for mashed potatoes or something like that. But what actually turns out is our DNA preferentially blocks off and shuts down parts of our DNA that we don't use. So we, because when they're creating, and all DNA ends up creating proteins. And so you can create a protein in a number of different ways. And so you can have like your healthy parts of your DNA shut down and only express maybe functional, but less healthy proteins, or only express or only create functional, but less healthy proteins if parts of your DNA are shut down. And what Bruce Lipton, Dr. Bruce Lipton, who is wrote The Biology of Belief, and that's a fantastic book, he discovered that what really controls that in petri dishes, because he's a PhD researcher, was what hormones we have. So that a cell exposed to stress hormones will shut down parts of the DNA that are related to creating good immune systems or healthy cellular structure and all of those things that you want. There'll be versus a cell exposed to lots of, you know, happy hormones and none of the stress hormones will have a different DNA expression. This is why identical twins start off in life with exactly the same DNA, but when you look at them when they're about 40, they are about as similar as two, depending on what they've done, but they can be as dissimilar as two regular siblings. Like their DNA can, their active functional DNA can look very different. If one decided to, you know, drink and smoke a lot and eat a lot of processed foods and live in a toxic environment and have bad relationships, their DNA will look very different from the person who pursued their passion and, you know, ate a lot of vegetables and drank enough water.
So what we think and how we eat and how we live our lives does make a difference.
Yes.
It changes our actual DNA.
Yes. For future generations, that's the part that I love about epigenetics, is not just what we knew from for our family's history, what we've acquired from our family, which is emotional traumas too. Like they've studied this in Holocaust victims. It's like they weren't even in the Holocaust, but it was generations before them that have carried that trauma into their energy fields, and that can be worked with. But I just wanted to say to you, Carmela, because you asked about your husband's risk of, you know, dementia or diabetes because it's in his family. And yes, he may be at risk now, but the beautiful thing about epigenetics is if he starts to change his lifestyle now and reduces and reverses any chronic conditions that he has, that will positively impact his children and their children and their children. So you can actually break the cycle, which is, you know, of your DNA, which to me is just really exciting and phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, remember, we replace ourselves basically every 7 years. We are completely brand new cellularly every 7 years. And lots of us, there's parts of us that replace ourselves multiple times a year. I think we can grow up to, you know, a new liver twice a year, basically. So there's what you do now really makes a difference. It really does.
And it proves what you said early about our body is always working on our behalf to heal itself. Like you said, Kathy, oh my God, the damage I did for 25 years with all these toxins. Right. It's true, but our body is constantly working to heal from it. So all we have to do is create the right environment for our body, what it already knows how to do, and stop getting in the way, then we can be so much better. So
this stop telling yourself that it's not going to work.
Right. This has been awesome. I really enjoyed this conversation. Dr. Hughes, tell everybody how they can connect with you, where they can find you, and reach out to you.
Yeah, perfect. So my name is my website address, Elizabeth with a Z, HughesMD.com. It's really easy. ElizabethHughesMD.com.
Awesome. Are you on social media as well or no?
I am. I'm on Facebook, so you can find me there as well, or LinkedIn if you're there. But yeah.
Wonderful.
Perfect. I want to just share briefly before we go. Again, I am Kathy Binner. I am your host. And you can find all of the replays of all of our calls at KathyBinner.com. Just scroll down the homepage until you come to Fit as a Fiddle Plus, and it's the free meetup icon. Just click through there and all of our replays are there. This one will be there probably by tomorrow morning. I will get this one uploaded into the site as well. And so you can go back and listen. For those of you that jumped in a little late, you can listen to the entire conversation. And I will put all of the connect links there as well so that you can connect with me, you can connect with Rita, and you can connect with Dr. Elizabeth Hughes. So thank you all so much for being on the call. And I just want to make sure we don't have any questions that we didn't, that we might have left unanswered. Is there anyone? Feel free to unmic if you have a comment or a question for Dr. Hughes before we go.
I do. First of all, I have to listen because I missed most of it. But evidently it's around, I was so interested in everything that was around. I was listening to something. I don't know if you've ever talked on this or either one of you or more knowledgeable in it, but like gut health, so somebody was talking about how you can detox from that, but you got to be careful how you detox, like when you're talking about the liver and different things, to how to take care of gut health,
So that's actually not something that's my specialty. I leave some of these physical modalities, like what to eat and things like that, to other people. I talk about what to think. And so because your intestines are so metabolically active, I mean, they're incredibly metabolically active, they respond to the stress hormones, the worry, the fears, instantly. Oh, wow. I believe that while there are lots of people out there detoxing and doing all sorts of things, you got to detox your brain as well. And that's not that any particular detox is a bad thing, but I think that when you just go with the physical, I'm only going to eat this, or I'm only going to do this, but you leave the mental, emotional junk going on, your body's responding to that just as much as what's going into your mouth.
Absolutely. Very much. I agree. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question, Terry. And tell us just briefly about you and who you are and where you're coming to us from, Terry.
Okay. Well, I'm coming from Columbus, Ohio, most people know, or Westerville. I live in Westerville. And I'm also, like Kyle, I'm in real estate. I've been in real estate for over 15 years. And I help, most residential real estate agent. And I really like to work with seniors with right sizing. I call it right sizing instead of downsizing. So it's getting us to that right place, for the next journey in our life, right? And to try to make it not so stressful, because stress really does affect everything. I know that, but I need to get this. I take on everyone's stress. I'm trying to take off, but I just think that's so true. Like today, I just was feeling so overwhelmed and I didn't feel good, and I did nothing different. I think it was just what you're telling yourself a lot. So thank you.
We talked about that early in the call, the stories we tell ourselves. So yeah. Yes. Yes, it's the whole picture. Everything works together, and I think we have to be whole in our physical body, our mental, our spiritual. All of it fits together. All of that fits together.
But I wanted to say something I heard Rita say, I'm sorry if I don't know your titles, but. I do juice plus once in a while, and I do oils and all these things. And I believe so much about what you're talking about, this, what we tell ourselves. But if we are not incorporating also putting good things in our body, like we're doing that, because mm-hmm. they're saying, it heals this, it does that. But if you're still eating donuts and you're still eating to sabotage yourself, I think it can only go so far.
Right.
And then the rest of it is up to what, drinking, sleeping, stress-free. So that's where it's hard. Every day you have to battle that,
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, but I want to give a sort of an extreme sort of end of things. So we all know who Nelson Mandela was, right? So, great man, lived 25 years imprisoned in solitary confinement in the worst conditions. Do you think he had good food? No. Do you think he had clean drinking water? No. Do you think he had the benefit of all of these lovely things? No. And when he walked out of prison, everybody expected to see this crippled, broken man because nobody had seen him for 25 years. Everyone expected to have be like hunched over, maybe needing help. How did he walk out? He walked out kick-ass, pardon me. I mean, tall, strong, well-dressed, carrying himself beautifully. And he went out and he gave a huge public speech. And everybody expected someone who was going to be crippled, but that's the power of what we think. He did not let anyone break him spiritually or mentally or emotionally. Absolutely not. And when you have that strong a foundation for your own well-being, like a mental, emotional, spiritual foundation, doesn't matter what you throw at you. Really doesn't. So yes, there is and I would never recommend anyone go on the Nelson Mandela Robben Island diet. Definitely not. But it's just an example that says you can be strong and healthy and vibrant. And he went on to live for years and run the country and, you know, do amazing things in South Africa to repair from all of the damage. And you would think 25 years of junk, and literally he was probably eating junk.
So true. So powerful, Doc. That was like the total body chill bumps. I think we should end it right there. What do you think, Kathy?
Absolutely. This has been an amazing conversation. Please tap through kathybinner.com. Please tap through, get the replay, get all of the connections. If you didn't get those during the conversation, please tap through for the replay. I will put everyone's connect links at the replay site as well. I want to thank everybody for coming. We are here every month. We have a new guest every month. And so we can't wait to see you again. And next month we have Teresa Frogat. She is from Mexico. And gosh, you're going to love her as well. We've got somebody new, like I said, every month. I can't wait to talk with her. We still have some openings. We have about 4 open spots in our agenda. And so if you have someone that you think would make a great guest on Fit as a Fiddle Plus, send me an email. You can connect with me or you can connect with Rita. Rita just put her information in the chat. Rita, can you put mine in there? KathyBinner.com.
Sure.
And so connect with either one of us if you have someone that you would like to have on, to have a discussion with on Fit as a Fiddle. And we just appreciate everyone so much for being here. So with that, we're going to say goodnight for tonight, and we'll see everyone next month.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for being here. Thank you so much, Dr. Hughes.
Yes, thank you so much. Bye-bye.